Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to three Guelphites that stood proudly against the world's biggest retailer and helped shape the Royal City reputation for solid and effective community organizing. This week we look back at the decade-long struggle against Walmart, which ended, actually, a decade ago, when Walmart opened its North End store in Guelph. David versus Goliath, the 2000 version, is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast, but first, my usual public service announcement. Guelph Politico is crowdfunded through Patreon, where you can contribute on a per-monthly basis of any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card, and all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through your generous donations, you'll be paying to keep the Politicast going, as well as regular coverage of city council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or go to patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. And now on with the show. Flashback to 1995. Batman Forever was the number one movie, Alanis Morissette blared from our radios, and a retail company called Walmart was taking over. Everywhere. They wanted to come to Guelph, and they had their eyes on a parcel of land at the corner of Woodlawn and Woolwich at the crossroads of Highway 6 and 7. Prime real estate, to be sure, but one that was marked down as industrial in the city plan, and the developers were determined to have it. In a story that was talked about all across North America, a small group of activists rallied to stand against Walmart in a heated battle that would see a petition signed by over 12,000 people against the retailer, repeated trips to the Ontario Municipal Board, two massive political shifts at City Council, and a decade-long clash that made headlines and made local heroes of the people that stood proudly against the inevitable. Three of those people joined me recently to remember the fight, the lessons learned, and how even though they lost, they really won. On the Politicast this week, I'm joined by former city councilor and small business owner Ian Finley, musician Sam Turton, and community activist Susan Watson. Now, before getting into this week's podcast, I do have a couple of disclaimers. Number one, I work part-time at Thomas Video, which is owned by Ian Finley. And number two, my sister Elizabeth is an assistant manager at the Orangeville Walmart after working her way up the ranks at the Guelph Walmart at Woodlawn. So that's for your information, and just in the interest of transparency. Having said all that, I caught up with the former members of the Walmart Wars earlier this week in studio.
Hi, I'm Sam Turton, and I've been living in Guelph since 2000. Had a graphic arts and advertising background, got into psychotherapy, which is my thing, been a musician all my life, and into communicating through music, which is how I got involved with the RSD situation.
My name is Susan Watson. I'm a local activist, and probably most of my involvement was near the end of the battle with the multi-faith aspect, at the multi-faith leg of the battle against Walmart.
Hi, my name is Ian Finley, and I'm a small business owner in the downtown and longtime resident and a recovering politician.
Still recovering after 2 years.
It does take a long time. 4 years, yeah.
Well, Ian, I'll start with you because you were there at the beginning, and I can imagine your motivations in getting involved had to do with the fact you were a small business owner and looking at, Ben Bennett called it on the cover of his book, Goliath. So in terms of your motivations, In the fact you were involved in the beginning, how did Residents for Sustainable Development begin, and how did that whole movement begin?
So this dates back to the mid-90s, and I was asked to speak to the Downtown Board of Management's annual general meeting about a planning application that was coming forward to council, requesting rezoning and to permit change in zoning for a junior department store, a Walmart. And at that point in time, I really didn't know much about the Walmart. I just thought it was another Yankee imperialistic company. I didn't really know much about it. And so
it's
I thought.
Not far off.
Well, you know, I didn't But it actually went much further than I thought it was going to go. So I started doing a little research, and this is before that whole interweb thing was. So doing research back then was a little more time consuming. So I started calling around, and Walmart was buying Woolworth stores all across Canada. So I was traveling to other communities where they were buying the Woolworths to do the conversions. Ours was a different animal in that they actually wanted to build a new store. And so I started sort of peeling this onion back, and I said, like, I'm not sure if this is something that people are aware of is happening to our community. They want to change the zoning to create this whole other commercial area in our town. I was a business owner in the downtown, and, you know, for a long time, downtown Guelph was the center of retail in the community. Now, it's not long since changed, and that's partly because of Walmart coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
But in that day, we had a real shortage of industrial land. And what this property was zoned current at that time was industrial. They wanted to switch it to commercial. And we said, well, hold on. There's a whole bunch of empty grocery stores in downtown. There's an empty Eaton's in the downtown.
Right.
There's other opportunities that are already zoned for commercial. Can we not keep this little piece of industrial land in hopes that we can develop it for jobs?
And this was just so people are attenuated to the area we're talking about. This was the 6 and 7 corner where Walmart stands today.
Yeah, Woodlawn and Woolwich Street. Yeah, which was not a strong commercial area. It was sort of the tail end of the auto mall, and
right.
You know, it was a motel there, and maybe a Mr. Sub, and a few, but it wasn't a huge regional draw that was what was being applied for by Walmart and others. So naturally, when and this is before the City of Guelph had something called the Commercial Policy Review,
mm-hmm.
like where the city was to have a discussion, lots of public input in how we want our city to grow, not only mm-hmm. residentially, but commercially. So this predated that, and we're saying, hold on, maybe we should be doing a review of our commercial development in the City of Guelph and find out if this is appropriate. Is this where we want to grow? Do we want to start switching over industrial land? Like, it begged a whole lot of questions. Notwithstanding other questions I had about Walmart as a corporate entity in itself,
right.
This was a planning application, so our arguments had to focus on the planning matters. But, you know, personally, I had a lot of other issues about how Walmart was conducting their business, the treatment of their employees, the treatment of their suppliers, the whole just-in-time where they're not warehousing, it's a lot of trucks on the road. I mean, I had a lot of questions about that. But the argument in the public realm was very much around planning matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's my sense, though, that was and to some degree still is part of Walmart's business model,
mm-hmm.
that they go into a community,
mm-hmm.
they buy very cheap industrial land, and then they strong-arm the local council into rezoning it into commercial, which exponentially increases the value. So they're really not just making their money as a retailer, they're making it as a landlord.
Right.
So they get this cheap land, it's rezoned, then it's very valuable, they rent it out to everybody else, they're paying almost nothing per square foot because they're the landlord and other people are paying, you know, fairly high rents. And so this happens again in communities, I think, across the U.S. and across Canada,
mm-hmm.
You know, as part of the model, buying something cheap and then, you know, putting on the screws to get it changed.
Vermont had a really interesting model where they said, you know, Walmart started out sort of in Arkansas and generally focused on southern and rural communities, but as they started to move north, Vermont said, hold on, this is not something that we're, I mean, we got a whole little thing going on here that this is going to be really disruptive to.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to start developing in our communities, you're going to have to start looking at redeveloping brownfields. And and so that was the model, because there wasn't really a lot of models to look at for guidance, that was the model that I was looking at, saying, hold on, you know, maybe we should redeveloping the Sobeys that went out of business or the Eaton Center that was empty. And we were looking for a strong anchor for the downtown. So we're trying to push them in that direction, obviously to no avail. They were not interested in that. They wanted the cheap land, as Susan was referring to. They switched the zoning on it, and, you know, they let everybody else pay a greater share of rent than they do.
Yeah, I think the reputation for Walmart was that they want to come in and make their Walmart their way as they see fit, and to mold a Walmart to the needs of a community didn't make a lot of sense to their business model, because the model is based on the universality of the system. Sam, you said you were new to the community at the turn of the century there, so you came.
Whoa!
Yeah. You came late to the party. So you know, in terms of why you felt this was something you wanted to take on as a new Guelph resident.
Well, I grew up in St. Catharines, and St. Catharines is working very hard today to turn itself from a downtown that's all boarded up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now they're working at that. I grew up in the 50s with a very vibrant downtown scene. Mm-hmm. And what I saw happen there was just the whole big box malls outside the center sucking the life out of the downtown, family businesses, et cetera. And when I moved to Guelph in 2000, I loved the place. I mean, the downtown was, to me, happening. There was a lot of arts and culture. And then I became aware that this thing was on the rise. And I lived in the North End, not very far from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in community gardening at the Ignatius Center, which is right pretty much beside it. And so I saw Walmart as sort of the biggest example of that phenomena of large-scale retail that's like taking stuff from China, blah, 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 and wrecking downtowns. And I thought, hey, I just moved here. I love the place. Mm-hmm. What can I do to shift the focus? And at that point, like the phrase that came along with the fight as we went along was not there, which is right. Basically saying that location in particular is far from ideal. It's got, you know, two cemeteries beside it. It's got the Jesuit Center, which is a 100-year-old retreat center and organic farm that's like a square mile in size. I mean, I have my issues with the retailer itself, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a whole other thing. My thing was to protect that area, which had its own flavor, which I thought was healthy, more naturalistic, and protect the downtown if at all possible.
I'm sorry, Susan, I cut you off.
Yeah, no, I've been reflecting back on the last 10 years, because you're saying, okay, it's 10 years since Walmart has opened.
Mm-hmm.
And in my view, I think that we very narrowly dodged a bullet. Because, yes, it's 10 years since Walmart opened, but it's also 10 years since Karen Farbridge was reelected in 2006.
Right.
And so we didn't just have a decade of Walmart. We had a decade of unprecedented downtown renewal. So we got a new City Hall, which actually created more employment spaces in the downtown when City Hall staff vacated the ones they were renting.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole rejuvenation of Market Square and the Convent and the housing development opposite the Guelph Youth Music Center and Tricar and the Guelph Central Station. And so if those things, if there hadn't been that, you know, unprecedented thrust of civic renewal during those same 10 years, I think that we could have ended up with the same boarded up downtown that Sam experienced in St. Catharines.
I want to jump in. My background when I came in was in communications.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got involved, I said, okay, what needs to happen? And that's where I focused, to get the message out and to raise awareness in the community. And knowing that this kind of fight, you know, is going to lean towards the big guy winning. But the idea is to raise awareness for support of localism and so on. And even leading into the election 2006, I think one of the reasons why that was such a successful thing with so many progressives prevailing was because of all that work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one of the phrases we used to joke around with is that resistance is fertile, which is, it's not necessarily a matter of winning, it's what you create in the effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. That election is fascinating, and I can't remember which documentary it was. There's been a couple of them. But it makes a special note at the end about when the Guelph Walmart opens, and it was just a couple of weeks after that council was swept out, and it was a sweep. I think all but three councilors remained.
Yeah.
And it you know, it almost seems biblical in a way. You know, they, Kate Quarry and the counselors who supported
Rocco Perfaro. Yeah, they were greeting at the opening.
They were able to lead Guelph to the Walmart Promised Land, but they could not enter. There's something poetic about that. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I do feel a bit sorry that they could not make a case for their reelection. I know Ian probably feels differently since he took one of those seats. But looking back from my point of view is just remembering that it was a collection of reasons. It wasn't just like we hate Walmart, which I think is what the opposition to it wanted to paint it as. Mm-hmm. But there was the small business concern. There was the concern about the location.
Mm-hmm. Who gets to decide what happens in local government? Yes, is it a democratically local government, that elected local government, that you decide this is how we're going to grow our city? Or is it some multinational corporation who says, no, we're going to overrule the democratic process, and this is, you know, our way or the highway. This is where we're going.
And we're still feeling that sting. I mean, I think there's still, I mean, we're going to see that because the Ontario government's talking about how to reform the OMB. There is still that sort of strain in that relationship with the OMB seeming to rule every time against what the city wants, as not just Guelph,
or against
any
citizens.
City.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. That generally, you know, the majority of the decisions go in favor of developers. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay. I was going to ask about how it all sort of came about, because there was all these moves going to the OMB, going back and forth, decisions stayed, and in the meantime, this became more than just about Walmart, too, because in the meantime, there was development being done on Stone Road, the University of Guelph properties, where they wanted to build the Canadian Tire and the Zellers and development there, too. And I think that part has kind of been lost along the way, too, that it wasn't just anti-Walmart. It was more of an eye to, are we just letting things happen?
Yeah, so there was the high-profile Walmart application, but there was a second application, as you mentioned, to build another power center, essentially, on Stone Road, on property that the university owned. And so, you know, getting back to the commercial policy review and my perspective coming from as a downtown business owner, here we are 10 years after they've opened, mm-hmm. and downtown is a very different place now than it was 10 years ago if you look at the mix of businesses in there. Hmm. There is no Buds anymore.
Correct. That would be a casualty for sure.
There is no Acres anymore. You know, there's a number of retailers, sort of pure, true retailers who have left. Now, I mean, there's normal cycles in business, and there's lots of reasons why this is happening. It's certainly not just Walmart. I recognize that. There's the internet that my kids tell me about, that things are happening on there. But so retail is changing. But if you look at the mix downtown now, there are very, very few true retailers left. Mm. There's some specialty shops. You know, certainly the Bookshelf is still around and is doing well, but it's not been an easy road for them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an art store downtown. There's a couple of shoe stores, a couple of women's clothing stores, men's clothing stores. I don't think there's any men's clothing stores anymore now. Sidonio's has relocated. Mm-hmm. Nat Morieto has gone for different reasons. But what you're
men don't dress up so much anymore either.
No. Fair comment. But you're not so. And there's many reasons why those businesses are leaving. It's not all, as I said, not all because of Walmart, but you're not seeing the retailers move into those empty spaces anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Like you're seeing more cafes, more restaurants, more entertainment, and it's great. But it's a different thing. Retail is a different landscape now. Right. The small guy who wants to open up a shop and sell shoes or clothing or whatever, it's a tough row to hoe. So so we were talking about how our community wants to grow and where we want to have retail and what we had in retail 20 years ago. And some people were saying that if you want to see Buds downtown, you can't have Walmart and Buds. Mm-hmm. And here we are.
Well, and I would say, I think another casualty I would posit is development in the East End, that they're still waiting on a grocery store. Mm-hmm. Because you can, and the land is zoned out there. Like anyone could open up there tomorrow. But if you're a retailer and Walmart is sucking all of the business, like into you know, the North and then to Stone Road and now Armel in the West. It's like, well, are we really going to get the business that we need to make it viable? So, you know, I know that's been a real sore point for people in the East End of the city. Would it have been different if Walmart hadn't been there? I think it might have been.
And the land is owned by, I think, Loblaws.
Correct.
And, I you know, not to say that they are not at fault, but, you know, it could be that they are scared off by the big green box.
It's a numbers game, right?
Sure.
It's like, are they going to make money in that location? That's what they're not providing a public service. They're running a business. So that's what it's going to come down to. And if it's overweighted in the North End and people are traveling there for their goods, mm-hmm. then maybe it's not going to be viable.
In the last 20 years, Walmart has made a big move into grocery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are the grocery retailer in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we're talking, like, when we were talking about it, it was kind of a junior, it was called a junior department store. Mm-hmm. Still, maybe technically we call it a junior department store, but there's nothing junior about it, and there's no department store about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's everything. It's one stop. You can get your oil changed while you're trying on a new dress and, you know, and yeah. picking up a loaf of bread.
Well, and frankly, like, I found the process deceptive. So I remember Maggie Laidlaw going after the Walmart lawyer who was claiming that this was going to be a standalone
right.
Walmart. Mm-hmm. And Maggie Laidlaw was, show me where there is anywhere in Canada a standalone Walmart.
Oh, yeah.
And then they were in there not even a year, and then they applied
yeah.
to increase
oh,
it
yeah.
by 50%, right?
Right? Yeah.
So it's like, let's get the foot in the door, and then, you know, we're gonna ramp it up. And then you were probably on council at that time. I remember, you know, council was really looking at mixed development. Could we have housing above it? And I remember it might have been you asking that question, and their planner was saying, well, that's not what we do. And it's like, I was like, well, that's really interesting, because here on that internet, that thing your kids use, there was an application in Leslieville in downtown Toronto where they were showing rental units and housing above a ground floor Walmart.
Mm.
So you're telling us that you can't do it, but meanwhile, in another community, here are your renderings that show you're proposing exactly that. So it just
yeah.
it did leave a really sour taste in my mouth. I guess we're, you know, what was it? Goldman Sachs talked about Muppet investors, and I think
right.
big corporations look at it as us as Muppet citizens
yeah.
in
yeah.
these things.
Well, one thing that it was also that we were looking at. It goes in there, and all that will follow,
yeah.
which is
we were right.
planning and the extension of it. And I remember, I'm sure, the OMB, I recall them saying, well, that isn't about this. This is just about this one application. Is it, what do you tell me? I mean, look at it now up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I was at my garden yesterday, finished digging my potatoes, lay back. It was a beautiful day. And just the hum of the traffic is so much louder than it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it happened. That's for sure. I mean,
and that was the one of the driving arguments in as this sort of reached a climax. And I think this is where a lot of your remembrances, Susan, might come into play. It sort of came to a head over the Jesuit Center and the
mm-hmm.
proximity to the mm-hmm. Jesuit Center,
mm-hmm.
and maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, but it did seem to rise and fall on Jim Prophet,
mm-hmm.
who eventually sort of, you know, reached a settlement with Walmart. It's like, it seemed like he kind of had enough of the fight at some point. Or if
I think that's accurate in some way. I think there was the whole OMB leg of it that played out.
Yeah.
And there was this whole, and I think that Jim had in some ways run out of steam. Like, is this how I want to spend my life force
right.
and the energy and the money of this organization fighting this corporation? But I think that's when some of us really had that a kind of revelation that the Jesuit Center was like, wait a minute, you guys, it's actually not just about the Jesuits, because there were Taoists and Buddhists
right.
and Native people and
yeah.
United Church people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really a sacred space for so many members in the community. And so that's when we launched this whole other charter challenge
yeah.
thing on freedom of religion. And this is a sacred
right.
space.
I remember the meeting when the OMB process had run its course.
Mm-hmm.
And we all got together, and I can't remember who raised it. at the time, but saying, well, I mean, this is a significant issue. A lot of us were really feeling that, like that it's an encroachment on the spiritual aspect of that. I started feeling it that way, as like there's something special here in this little area, and I felt kind of almost violated by it. And then it came forward, well, this could be a charter challenge, interfaith. Mm-hmm. And that was what was amazing about that is how many people came forward from all mm-hmm. different faiths. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
it made the Globe and Mail.
Mm-hmm. My job was very much in communications, is taking a story and making sure that people get that story. And because I wanted people to be aware and whether it falls with support. I mean, I remember getting in contact with the people who were fighting Walmart in New York City. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think to this day, there isn't a Walmart in any of the boroughs. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they said that they used to use our example as an inspiration for their fight, because ours had gone on for 11 years. It was the longest running fight in North America at the mm-hmm. point. And so we rolled with this thing, and Jim, I remember him saying to me, well, my picture is that we've been here for 100 years. We're going to outlast them. We're not going to give up this land. This land isn't like this becomes like an urban forest or a haven for people. And he had this big, long feeling of time and deeper meaning. Hmm. And I think he eventually felt like, well, that's where I have to sit with this.
So I think what we did get out of it, though, I think what happened at that stage, the building actually started, right? So we were carrying this challenge, but they were starting to grade the land. They were starting to move everything around. They were starting to build.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't able to stop that part of it. So at a certain point, I think that we did get a certain leverage out of having taken that forward. So we went into some negotiations and really got some massive mitigation put in there. So they agreed to put in these massive burns. So yes, you can hear the hum, but you can't
it's way
really
better.
See it.
No, you can't.
See
I know.
It from the Ignatius lands. And they mm-hmm. put in like a huge amount of trees. So I think in terms of, from that, what we achieved in terms of mitigation to buffer the Jesuit Center was way more than we could have ever achieved if we hadn't done that.
And one part of the point was just getting the concessions.
Right.
Because that didn't happen in places where they won.
Right.
Just the fact that we could put up such a fight that I think was freaking them out, to tell you the truth. I mean, they had guys coming from Bensonville, and they were like, yeah, because we were holding them up, right? That then it, I know that people who were wanting to fight Walmart in other places were like, oh, hello. Like, if they'll bend for this,
right,
then we can push them too. So a part of it was, again, a longer picture. Like, if, like, beyond just a win is what kind of effect can we have down the road for other communities, et cetera.
It was unprecedented because Walmart was a steamroller. And, I mean, I think the success of this decade-long fight isn't that you didn't keep Walmart out. It's that you were able to make Walmart bend. And when you are a huge machine like Walmart, that's as hard as defeat. Just the simple admission that we can compromise, which, I mean, as it turned out, was perhaps enough to get the thing going and to shut down the last of the protests.
I was invited by Walmart to help them draft their corporate social responsibility document. It was an interesting exercise, and they were very clear in who I was, and I was very clear in who I was and who they
That's
were.
That's really interesting.
It was a fascinating day of my life spent in the belly of the beast, so to speak, in the Mississauga headquarters of Walmart Canada, helping them draft their greenwashing campaign.
Did you feel that was a success in some regard?
I do, yeah. I mean, how much of an impact I had on that final document, I'm not sure. But, you know, I said my piece, and I pointed out where I thought there was fault in their mm-hmm. in their in their business, and you know, it's much better to be in the tent than outside trying to pee into the tent. So so that was definitely one of the successes for sure, I think, was getting there, and certainly the mitigation, the sound attenuation attempts that they made. So there were a lot, and the whole community was talking much more about planning, and it did lay the seeds for that 2006 municipal election and many other things that have happened since then. So like it really, there was a lot of really good, I mean, ultimately, yeah, we lost at the OMB, but I think it made our community stronger for it.
And it's interesting too, because yeah, it's been 10 years, but now there are two Walmarts in Guelph, and it seems that, not that I was expecting the huge effort to come out, because there was this big building already there on Stone Road and that needed someone to fill it. So it was a different situation, but it does seem like we have come to a place of acceptance. And even mainstream media did note that when they started to make that, build that Walmart.
Well, I don't think there was any basis to keep them out of that. And, and that's the same with the location. Like, if they had chosen to go into Armel's property in the West End, which was zoned commercial, no one could have said anything. You can't, you know, I can't tell you not to move to Guelph. You can't tell a specific retailer that they're not allowed in your community. That's not an option. Yeah. So if they could have come into Guelph years ago if they had played by our rules. All we could say was, as Sam said, not there, like not between a cemetery and a retreat center on industrially zoned land. That's what the argument came down to.
Well, and how, what that meant symbolically to how communities create themselves. I mean, that was a big element of it. I mean, there's those of us who don't like the idea of giant retailers and what they do to communities. And there probably would have still been that feeling. But in me, I would have been like maybe a bit ticked. But there's a lot of big retailers. They're just the biggest, right? So if you're going to go after them, I mean, there's a lot of others you can go after too. And if they'd have gone in the West End, it would have annoyed me, let's say. And I might have protested or created awareness of what this can do. But it was the fact that of that they went where they went, for a number of reasons regarding the value of that property as a more of a green area kind of thing, and the fact that they from Arkansas were pushing around our community, and that's serious stuff.
I think if that second Walmart, if the application had been for the Yorklands property, I think we would be repeating
we'd
have been having the same discussions we did back in 95,
and we'd all be out.
For no question. Like it was, but because it was on land that was already, as Susan mentioned, a commercial location, and it was already zoned. I mean, you know, we'd lost that argument. But if it was to go out on the York Roads land, we'd be up in arms again.
Yeah, we swapped out a Zellers for a Target for a Walmart.
All made in China.
Yeah, same day, different store. Or anyway. This is a bad day for metaphors, I think. Any regrets? I mean, it's anything you would have done differently? I mean, it almost feels like, in a way, we still kind of deal with this, the Guelph factor, you know, that term's kind of still hangs in the air, and it's very much tied to this. And
oh, meaning democracy and due process? Is that what you mean by the Guelph factor? Bring it on.
That's one definition.
Citizen engagement is huge in this community, and you know, I think we just have to recognize that that's one of the strengths of our community, is that we are, many of us in this community are very passionate about what's happening and how our community is growing, and that's great. And the developers who understand that and embrace it make great projects, like the Woods Project, you know, is an example of a development where they understood the dynamics in this community, they understood that neighborhood, and they couldn't just come in and say, this is what we're going to do, this is when we're going to do it, sit down, ladies. Like, they, you know, early on in the process, they engaged the neighborhood, and I think there's a much better product there now. Product, I mean, what's being built is much better than what another developer would have done. You know, kudos to them, for sure.
So one outcome for me is I think it really deepened the connection of the community with the Jesuit Center. Like it really put the Jesuit Center and how amazing that place is and how precious that is to the community. And I entered into a period of a number of years when my kids did something called Cosmic Camp up at the Jesuit Center. And then I, you know, ran the Cosmic Camp. And, you know, my spouse has been on retreats up there. We'll hike up there as a family. So I feel that that whole process really deepened my relationship with the center in a way that I've been really grateful for.
Yeah, I mean, the community gardens is just hundreds of gardens there. It's a So, and I don't know what the awareness was prior to it, but I'm sure it really helped. Regrets? You know, I was just scanning my mind, and I can't think of any. I think we gave it the whole shot, you know, all the way down the line, and I could understand all the parts of it, even, you know, when Jim decided to make concessions. Mm-hmm. It's like, it all kind of made sense, And I know, Ian, you know, you're saying that the downtown isn't as it used to be. Some retailers are out. But when I look at other cities of our size, I think the downtown, I mean, we got Market Fresh. We got a grocery store, you know. I mean, that it's just
a bookstore,
more.
A bookstore, a cinema, a grocery store.
Oh, yeah. And people come in here to visit me or whatever, and they always really think the downtown is special. I mean, even Europeans, you know, who have, in a lot of cases, more sort of that total city center kind of scene. So, I it's about community awareness, and I think we're good for that. We rise to the occasion, and we communicate. We do that. And I'm happy for it. And it brought me in. I mean, I loved the town, but I wasn't so connected to everybody. Hmm. And there was a meeting, and I thought, I gotta get in here. And that, then I'm in. You know, I felt like a real part of the community. I haven't left that since.
Well, David didn't beat Goliath, but they did break. Maybe David broke Goliath's arm, and they shook hands and became best of frenemies. Again, the metaphors. Sure. Yeah. Anyway, Sam, Susan, Ian, thank you all so much for taking part in our retrospecticus, and thank you for the good community building.
Yeah, well, thank you, Adam,
thanks, Adam,
for the opportunity.
Thanks,
Adam. Yeah. It's great. And once again, that was Sam Turton, Susan Watson, and Ian Finley. You can still find much of the Chronicle of the Residents for Sustainable Development's struggle against Walmart at their old website, not-there.ca. The earlier pre-internet days of RSD are available in book form, by Ben Bennett and Gail McCormick in a tome entitled Guelph Against Goliath, and you can find that in the stacks at the Guelph Public Library. As for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast, we will call that a wrap. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host of the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is also a Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And, of course, please donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And, as with every week, I appreciate all those who have donated and continue to donate to Politico. Thank you so much for contributing to this, what I think is a worthy cause. For all the latest local political news, please check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, and until then, see you next time.